Welcome to Superheroes of Science. I'm Steven.
And I'm Sarah. We co-host Science from the Experts. Our guests are professionals doing cutting-edge science right now.
They're experts in their field, discussing what they know best. So listen up and learn real science from real people.
Subscribe now and stay informed of our latest episodes and show your support. Joining us today for Superheroes of Science, we are excited to welcome back Bryony Horgan, Professor of Planetary Sciences here at Purdue University. So
great, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
So, are you the campus rover lady?
I am. Purdue loves to put the rover everywhere.
And yeah. I see you and the rover and all these things. Yeah. So you're like the official campus rover lady. Yeah. People might think that's something else, but what type of rover are we talking about?
Yes, I work with NASA's Mars rovers that are on Mars today, roving around. These are robots that we control that are doing awesome, amazing science for us on another planet.
And that was a big, Perseverance?
Yeah, Perseverance and Curiosity is still there, too. So we actually have two rovers right now still running on Mars.
The older one, yep, they work?
Still there, yep, still going.
Oh!
Do they interact? Do they see each other?
No, they're on opposite sides of the planet. So they never get to talk.
But. That sounds like a good choice.
Yeah.
Poor lonely robot, but good choice.
Well, you know, we used to have a little robo friend with Perseverance. We used to have the Ingenuity helicopter.
Helicopter.
Yeah, unfortunately, its mission just ended earlier, about a week ago. So it's but we had a little friend up until then.
And did the Perseverance find him? Find the I'm calling it him. I don't know what we're calling the helicopter. Did it find the helicopter?
Yeah, the helicopter was kind of following us around, or it would kind of fly ahead and scout the terrain ahead for us, and it was just kind of going with us through the whole mission. It was only supposed to do 5 flights just to show that we could, you know, do powered flight of a helicopter on another planet. But in the end, it did, I think, over 70 flights. You know, years on Mars, which is awesome.
Well, that's cool. They didn't expect it would last that long?
Or no, because it's a...
for it just in case?
No, and it wasn't, you know, they had like a minimum thing they had to do for NASA, right? That they had to say, we have to do 5 flights to show that we can do this. But, you know, it's great because it's this little, pretty cheap little helicopter they put together just to show. You know, it's literally like this little helicopter, a few blades, and a couple of off-the-shelf cell phone cameras that they could use to you know, have it navigate on its own. And that's it. And it lasted for years. It flew all over Jezero Crater. It was just really exciting. So we were really glad that it went on for as long as it did.
Nice. Now, all right, so you were part of the team for Perseverance, mm-hmm. right, from NASA. And why did y'all pick that crater?
So Jezero Crater, we chose it for this mission because it's a very special mission. So with this rover, with Perseverance, we're trying to look for signs of ancient microbial life on Mars. And it's a really, really hard job. You know, microbes are very small, very hard to detect. So we're looking with the rover, we're looking for things like organic materials, all of that. But ultimately, we're going to have to bring samples that we take with the rover back to Earth. So that's really what this mission is.
Oh.
Yeah. And so Jezero Crater, we chose it because it's a pretty special place on Mars. We can see it's this crater that was once filled with a really big lake. And we know that because there's a river channel that cuts through the rim of the crater and actually left behind a river delta. And that tells us there was a lake there for a very long period of time. And we know lakes were these nice habitable environments that microbes could have lived in. And they leave behind sediments and minerals that could have trapped those microbes and helped us find them today, help preserve mm-hmm. them until today. So that's why we chose Jezero Crater.
And so when you say lake, are you talking about a water lake?
Yeah, water lake.
So there was water on Mars.
There was a lot of water on Mars. There's actually still a lot of water on Mars. It's just mostly trapped as ice under the surface.
Wow. Why is it not there now?
It's a great question. So it's not there now because Mars has lost a lot of its atmosphere. So Mars used to have a pretty thick, mostly carbon dioxide atmosphere, we think, and it was thick enough that it could have liquid water. But as it lost its atmosphere, it's just this kind of the small planet. It had, you know, big impacts, big, you know, asteroids hit it that ripped off a lot of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. As it lost it over time, it's just too cold and dry there now to support liquid water on the surface. So it's either a gas or it's solid, frozen as ice.
And so if it becomes exposed, does it just sublimate out then?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because of the... and so what... Now, you said... All right, that brought like 4 questions at once, and I'm having troubles getting any of them out. How are you getting a sample back here?
It's a great question. So NASA's working on that. It's a whole separate mission called Mars Sample Return. And NASA's trying to figure out right now how exactly they can do it without spending tons and tons of money. It's going to be expensive either way, but they're trying to figure out how to make it cheaper. But the idea is you send another mission to Mars that'll basically land a little rocket, and then our rover will actually go up to it and put these little rock cores we've drilled into this capsule on a rocket on a launching platform. That rocket then launches off of Mars, has to rendezvous with a satellite in orbit, and the satellite in orbit at Mars has to come back to Earth and land on Earth. So you can see why it's expensive, right? Because it's like three different missions in one. It's complicated. But it's one of the most important space missions we've been wanting to do for decades and decades, because it has the potential to teach us about the origins of life on Earth and other planets. It has the potential to tell us how Earth-like planets evolve over time. Mars is one of the best places to study that. So these samples are a huge just scientific treasure trove that we really want to get back, but we want to make sure we don't completely overspend to do it. So we're working on it.
So what kind of data, because you're getting data from the rover now, and you said the other rover.
Curiosity.
Forgot its name already. both Curiosity and Perseverance are both sending you data sets.
Yeah.
What type of data are they collecting for the scientists like yourself?
So they actually have different instruments, but some of them are kind of the same. So both rovers have really amazing cameras, and so that's mostly the data that I work with is the cameras on board. And you know, we basically have the eyes of the rover, right, that look out and take these beautiful mosaics of the landscape we're driving through. And we do a lot of awesome geology with that to try to understand, you know, what kinds of ancient environments are recorded in the rocks we're driving over. That's really great. But we have tons of other instruments, too. So Curiosity, that rover is more about kind of drilling into the rocks, getting a sample, and then grinding up that sample and seeing what kind of, you know, the chemistry and mineralogy and the organic content, really kind of breaking that rock down to see what it's made of in a lot of detail. But for Perseverance, because we're so focused on looking for things like signs of life, we take a very different approach. So for that rover, instead, what we do is we just grind off the surface of the rock, and then we look really carefully to see what the rock's made of by using microscopes and things. And that's really important, because if you're looking for signs of life, you really need to know what those, you know, organics and things look like and where they are in the rock. And so for Perseverance, we have a bunch of really amazing microscopic instruments that can look at, you know, chemistry, organics at, you know, the scale of a grain of salt across this rock. And so that helps us understand, you know, whether or not we should take a sample of that rock to bring back.
Now, when you say camera, I think of my cell phone has a camera.
Yeah.
But I think you're talking about something that has a little more wavelength than this. So what all type of things does this camera see?
Well, we actually have 37 cameras on board Perseverance.
Oh.
And so they go from everything to basically like, you know, little cell phone-like cameras. All that, you know, help us understand, you know, the rover actually uses cameras while it's driving. It's actually a semi-autonomous robot that helps, you know, figures out where it's going to drive around. Mm-hmm. It sees rocks, goes around them, it finds paths to go, and it uses cameras for that. And those are just more like cell phone cameras. But then, so the team we work on, so the MassCamZ camera, that's a science camera. It's a pair of cameras, so they operate like your eyes, so we can see in stereo, create 3D maps of the landscape around us. Then we also can pass filters in front of the cameras to help us understand how the surface, what color it is, you know, different wavelengths, looking at how it's reflecting light, different colors, different wavelengths. And from that, we can actually figure out the specific minerals that are present and what the rock's made of. And so it's sort of a pretty cheap and easy way to get that kind of data, which otherwise is a lot harder to get.
When it's looking for minerals, what specifically are we looking for that's like, oh, this is probably most promising, going to have this microbial?
Yeah, so with our cameras, we can't do every mineral because we're only doing, you know, visible light that we can see with our eyes. It's the same kind of wavelengths. But we can do things like look for whether iron in the rocks is oxidized or reduced. And that's really important for thinking about ancient environments, right? What kinds of microbes live in really oxidizing environments? That's kind of harsh for life, actually, versus reducing environments. You know, that's better for life. So we could do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We can look for specific minerals that form in water. So we can look for things like clays, which are, you know, the kind of minerals that form in lakes or the soils in your backyard. We can look for carbonates, which is, you know, the mineral that precipitates out of water in your bathtub, right? So all those kinds of minerals we can see with those cameras too. And so we can tell which rocks have those minerals, and so then which rocks we should go up to and look at in more detail with our other instruments.
Okay. Now, a team of scientists of which you were part of chose this location. Right now, a year later, are you still happy with this location? Or are you now thinking, oh, the grass might be livelier on the other side? Lively, get it? See what it is?
I do. You know, it's been really great. Jezero Crater has been a really awesome place to explore and get samples because it's just incredibly diverse. You know, we landed and, you know, the safe, very flat part of the crater floor, it turned out that was a bunch of lava flows, which for life isn't as exciting, but it turns out those lava flows did host kind of hydrothermal systems that could have supported life and had organics in them. So we sampled those, but they also are great samples because we can use lava flows to actually date when they were in place, when the minerals in them crystallized. So we can bring those samples back and figure out when those lava flows were laid down, and then the delta is actually on top of them, so we'll know then when the lake was there too. So that's really exciting, and we got a bunch of those samples. And then the whole river delta, it turns out it is a delta. It was in place, but there's a bunch of different environments within it. Some of them are kind of floodplain environments. Some of them are deep lake environments. Some of them are, you know, flash flood kind of environments. So we have samples from across all of those, which are really exciting. And every, you know, in these kind of sandy river samples, every single grain that we've collected is from a different rock. And every single one of those tells a totally different story about some rock that's, you know, miles and miles upstream in the watershed. So we have all those hopefully coming back to Earth, and they're all really exciting. And then most recently, the new thing that we're doing, where we just got to this part of the crater that's like right on the edge of the crater, kind of behind the delta. From orbit, we thought this part of the crater, it's weird because it has these really strong carbonate mineral signatures, which form in water. And you have CO2 dissolved in water, precipitates out these minerals. And this kind of, we really see them in kind of a bathtub ring around the edge of the crater. And on Earth, when you see that, usually what that forms from is basically on a beach, along the edge of a sea or a lake, mm-hmm. where you have carbonate precipitating out in the shallow water, turning into a beach. So imagine like a nice white sandy beach on the edge of Jezero Crater. And it turns out that's actually at least partly what we're finding in that area.
Oh.
Like this ancient beach deposit, which is totally different from the lake, you know, has all these mineral precipitates that could trap ancient microbes in them. So we're really excited for those samples too. Okay. So it's great. It's just going to get better. We're actually just about to climb out of the crater onto the crater rim, which is, you know, on Mars, we don't have plate tectonics. And so we don't have mountain chains, but we have crater rim. So we have circular mountain ranges all over Mars. Mm-hmm. And we're about to climb up onto the crater rim, which is going to give us amazing views over everything around us. And crater rims are exciting because when an impact crater hits another planet, it digs up stuff from very, very deep. And so we're going to be able to look at and sample some of the most ancient, deepest stuff from the crust of Mars, which will help us understand how Mars formed and how the Earth formed too.
Now, you're finding deltas and geomorphological features in a crater.
Yeah.
And so there was a large impact before Mars lost its atmosphere.
Right.
And then we had water flowing over that crater.
Right.
Okay. Are there lots of places like that on Mars where it had been hit and covered with sediment or deposition?
Yeah, so we see dozens or even hundreds of places on Mars that are like that. So kind of other lakes like this. Jezero is special because the delta is so well preserved, we can really see it.
Okay.
You know, a lot of other places that the deltas have been eroded, it's hard to tell what they are. They've, you know, later stuff has come through and deposited on, they've been buried, right? But Jezero is special because we can really, really see what's going on.
What's special about the Earth that we don't have large, I mean, I know there are some impact, I know, like Kentman Quarry, not far from here, the campus. And so I know there are some throughout the world, but it doesn't seem like there's very many spots where we have large impact craters on Earth. What is special about the Earth that has protected us from that?
It's a great question, and we haven't been, actually. It turns out the reason we don't see that on Earth is because almost all of the surface of the Earth is so young. And, you know, almost all, the surface of the Earth, it's almost all younger than a few hundred million years, right? On Mars, the rocks that we're driving over right now, they were all put down probably 4 billion years ago. So this is why it's so exciting, because we're able to kind of go back in time in the history of an Earth-like planet and get these rock samples from just basically the dawn of time, right? Back when the whole solar system was just a shooting gallery of asteroids shooting around and making these giant craters. Back when the planets were first forming, kind of the first surfaces, the first oceans, all this stuff was first there, when life was first beginning. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons we're so excited about this, because, you know, our record of the origin of life on Earth is basically gone. You know, the rocks that formed then, the few that are still around have been buried into the Earth and come back up, but they're totally messed up. On Earth, you know, those same rocks from 4 billion years ago are just sitting there at the surface waiting for us to go get them. So we're pretty excited that we have, you know, those samples literally from a 3.5-4 billion year old lake river on Mars that we're going to be able to bring back to Earth.
Why does Mars not have the plate tectonics that's recycling the materials like we do?
It's a great question. It's actually probably one of the big, big outstanding questions in Earth and planetary mm-hmm. science. You know, what plate tectonics is so important for the Earth, for mm-hmm. keeping it fresh, providing nutrients, right, making the continents that we live on.
Yeah.
So we don't know. I mean, there's some, a few ideas. You know, Earth, it's special because it has a lot of water, and we think water, the oceans are really important for plate tectonics and kind of getting the crust to the point where you can actually break it and do that kind mm-hmm. you know, do that kind of stuff with it. The Earth is also a lot bigger than Mars, and so probably being big enough and having enough heat inside of it to drive that is really important. You know, you look at Venus, right, which is actually almost exactly the same size as Earth. It has tectonics, but it's not plate tectonics as far as we can tell. So that's probably because it doesn't have enough water. At least that's one idea. But we're actually sending missions to Venus, hopefully in the next 10 years, to try to figure that out.
So. Oh. Now, it's... What did you do before Perseverance then? Because these puppies take a while to get there.
They do, yeah.
And
yeah.
so it's, you can't just be like, that can't just be like your job. Oh, we're going to do Perseverance and wait for how long for it to arrive?
Yeah, it takes years to build. It only takes 6 months to get there, okay. but it takes years. And we started building Perseverance back in like 2014.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so it takes a while.
So what did you do while you're waiting on the data?
So, I mean, we do a lot of other stuff in my group. So we do rover, but we also work on all kinds of other things about Mars and the moon. You know, we try to understand, you know, using satellite data around Mars and the moon, you know, what kinds of geology is on the surface, you know, on Mars, you know, where else were there ancient habitable environments we can go look for. So we use, you know, images, and then we also use data on the minerals on the surface using spectroscopy to figure that out. We also study, you know, ancient volcanoes on Mars and the moon. We're doing some work to help prep for humans going back to the moon with the Artemis program, which is really exciting.
Ooh.
So we also do some work on Earth here, going to Mars-like environments on Earth to help us understand what we find on Mars. So we have a lot to keep us busy.
Well, all right, so I have two questions. And both of them, Sarah's for cover, going to bring up later that I can't believe you asked. But one, what is this obsession with life?
Yeah.
It's what makes us think that there actually might be life there, other than conditions or could have been favorable to support it?
That's a philosophical question, right? Because you're really asking, like, you know, it's a really good one because, you know, how special are we, right? That's a question. It goes back to not just, you know, how did we get, why are we here, all this stuff, but, like, how special is Earth? You know, is Earth really one in a quadrillion, right? Is it, are we the only, not even intelligent life, but just life that's out there? Or how common is it? And so that's one of the ways that NASA is trying to answer that is saying, okay, well, intelligent life, they're working on that in other ways, you know, listening for other civilizations, yeah. all that, right? But microbial life's a more fundamental question. It's like, okay, how common is just any life at all? And so in our solar system, there's only a couple places we can really work on that. So Mars is a great one for looking at kind of the early period in life development for when, you know, life might have just been starting. It's kind of a time capsule for that. Mm-hmm. NASA's also worked looking at places in our solar system that could host life today. So like the icy moons of Jupiter and Saturn, we think some of them have oceans that could be, you know, habitats for life today. And so they're sending missions to look for that too. But it really comes down to understanding how common life is, how special are we, how did we get here, why are we here? It's starting to get it. Answering some of those questions.
And so we're eventually going to have a way station on the moon, which is going to be like a docking station to go to Mars?
Maybe. I think we'll probably, the moon is really, we think of it in some ways, it's its own like really special place to go. We can do amazing science and exploration there. But in a lot of ways, it does help us understand how to get to Mars. You know, it's helping us understand how do you build a habitat on another planet? How do you protect from radiation? How do you protect from dust? Dust is really bad. You know, how do you explore safely with astronauts? Because, you know, the moon is really hard in a lot of ways, but Mars is a lot harder because on the moon, you know, you can be in constant communication with Earth, right? With Houston,
yeah.
right? Talking all mm-hmm. the time and getting lots of feedback. On Mars, you can't do that. It takes anywhere from 7 to 20 minutes for a one-way radio signal to Mars. And so the astronauts really are kind of on their own when they're on Mars. They can get a little help, but they have to make a lot of decisions and really be pretty independent. There's no rescue missions you can really send to Mars, mm-hmm. barring things like The Martian, right? Which was totally,
yeah,
that movie was insane.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It was Matt Damon
yeah.
there. Could you see?
So it's just Mars is, it's so much harder that a lot of people think that we really do need to get the moon right first before we can do it. But, you know, Mars is exciting, too, because we can do all kinds of cool science there with humans, or we've already been talking about that a lot, about what kinds of cool new things can we do with humans once they're on Mars.
Yeah.
So no signs of ancient advanced civilizations yet?
No, not yet. And we have, you know, we have pretty good cameras in orbit around Mars. They have they all have the images we get back have a resolution of, like, 25 centimeters per pixel, so to the point where if you kind of did this and waved at the satellite, we could see you doing that, right? And we haven't seen anything yet.
I was hoping.
But with the potential for microbial life, are there safeguards surrounding that, both for Mars and for, like you said, might be bringing planetary samples
protection.
Back.
So NASA has a whole office called Planetary Protection, and the idea is that both you want to protect Mars from us contaminating it too much, right? What kind of safeguards can you put in place on us, you know, kind of contaminating that environment with our own life? And it's hard, right? Because we, you know, especially once you start sending humans, like, we're literally just bags of microbes, basically, right? Even the International Space Station, just, you know, there's, like, some set rate of microbes that leak out of it every day, right? And so once you send humans, it's, you know, it gets really hard. But once we're only sending robotic spacecraft, you know, we can try to do things like sterilize them, at least to some level. Mm-hmm. We can try to make sure, you know, that we're protecting Mars at least a little bit. It's definitely a challenge when it's in, you know, space exploration is an international endeavor, and not every country has the same space safeguards that we do. But we try, and there, you know, the UN has some committees that think about this and stuff. But we also are worried about bringing stuff back here. So, like, this is one of the problems we have is, okay, we want to bring these samples back with Mars sample return from Jezero Crater, but we want to make sure, and we want to look for signs of life in there, including perhaps even living life. We don't think there's any in the surface of this planet, but, you know, we want to make sure that see if it is there, but we also want to make sure we don't get contaminated by it. So how do you balance out, do you sterilize the samples? Or do you look for signs of life? Like, how do you balance out the safety versus the science? There's a whole office, that thinks about this for how to handle it.
And the location that was selected because high confidence that there was not living anything life there. There's other areas on Mars that we couldn't land in because we're not as confident that there couldn't be microbial life currently.
Right. So we call those places on Mars special regions. And so NASA has defined where these things are. And it's places where there's ice that's really close to the surface. Because you can imagine if you had, say, a lot of our spacecraft now run on radiothermal generators, you know, little tinier nuclear-powered spacecraft. Mm-hmm. Those are warm. And so if you crashed that into the surface, you could create a little habitable environment and potentially contaminate that area because there's water and the ice would melt and all that, right? There's also places where we think it's possible. There's still a lot of debate, but it's possible there's liquid water that's not too far from the surface. Maybe even, you know, kind of salty brines that are stable at low pressure that are leaking out. We're not confident in that in the science community, but it's possible. So NASA said, you know, if you see, so we're always looking for those, the kind of leaky, you know, flows with our rovers. And luckily we haven't seen any yet in the places we've landed. But if we saw those, NASA would be concerned and say, like, let's take a pause and figure out what this is. Cause we don't want to contaminate that potential ecosystem either.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is an exciting problem.
Right.
Potential problem.
Right.
It's because, I mean,
yeah.
Imagine finding it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate you taking time chatting with us and giving us an update. And I'm disappointed the helicopter is done. But I'm excited to hear that because I did not realize Curiosity was still running around,
too. Yeah,
still
going.
And so I think I'm disappointed, but I'm more excited that we have two rovers. Do other countries have do other countries have rovers too?
So we not running right now, but China landed a rover on Mars at the same time we landed Perseverance, and it worked for, I think, on the order of like a year and got some data back, and they published data into a totally different part of the planet, so that's really exciting. And there's other countries thinking about it, planning on it, so hopefully, you know, it's international, right? So we hope all of our international friends can come help explore it with us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Science from the Experts from Purdue University's Superheroes of Science.
If you like this episode, subscribe, give us a positive view, and share the love. Boiler up!
Hammer down!